Dale and New Folk Hairston Stevens for the opportunity of coming this morning to sharing with you a little bit about Kairos Prison Ministry. So thank you for that. We're going to have a little bit of a PowerPoint presentation, a few slides. That's sort of like a bit of a formal introduction to Kairos and give you a little bit of background, and then I hopefully we'll move on and bring it a bit more closer to home and some of the experiences we've had. So, that's the technical department over there. Well done. Okay, so if we could just have the first slide, thanks. Oh, here it is, Kairos Prison Ministry Australia. Oh, I can look that way too. Isn't that wonderful? Technology. Okay, so just Kairos Prison Ministry, slide two, thanks. Okay. I'm having trouble reading that actually, but this is all right. Started originally in America, as a lot of these things do, and it came to Australia in the early 90s and was picked up there. The early Kairos programs were run at Long Bay and Parramatta jails. But it's overseen by a board in Australia, and there's an Australian board that covers all of Kairos in Australia. Then we have each state has its own council. And then we come down to regional committee. So there's a regional committee here in Tamworth that looks after the Tamworth jail and also Kairos outside for women here. Okay. It reaches out to those who have been locked up, incarcerated, and to their families and those who work with them. And it tries to bring the message of the gospel, really, hope in places of loneliness, isolation and despair. And what if I can just tell you that in New South Wales, at any one time, there's approximately about 11,000 people in jails, and Australia-wide, possibly 30-plus. And the interesting thing that's interesting there is that it's estimated that 75% of children who have a parent in jail will go on to commit a crime. And so you've got this cycle going all the time, all the time. So we need to try and break that up if we can. Now, the Greek word is God's special time, Kairos. You and I look at our watches and we tell the time. That's chronos. We get our word chronology from that. But Kairos is special time. It's a bit like when a woman's about to have a baby. She goes to the doctor and the doctor throws a dart in the calendar and says, oh, it's about November so-and-so. But we know that as we get closer to that, the bub decides special time. And so the bub comes in its special time, not in the chronos time. And if you're interested, you can look up, Paul uses this word kairos in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4, and he says this, when the fullness of time came, God sent forth his son, born of woman under the law. God's special time. Galatians chapter 4 verse 4. And if you're in jail, time means a lot to you because you're doing time. So it's a wonderful combination of that word there. Okay, thank you. It's a mission in our own backyards because just about anywhere within a few kilometres of you, you'll find a correctional centre or you'll find people who have been impacted by having had somebody in a correctional centre. That could be a brother or a sister or a husband or a wife, who knows. It's Christian in nature, but the inmates who come and those who come to an outside don't have to have had any religious experience at all or any affiliation. They just come. We just ask them to come. As sort of Kairos inside, that's the work that goes on within the jail behind the barbed wire. Kairos outside is for those who've been impacted by having had somebody in the jail. And then Kairos torch, that reaches out to young people between 18 and 25 years of age, and there are a couple of juvenile correctional centres where we actually do torch. And one of the wonderful things about torch, the team that go in, because a lot of these young fellas and young women have never had real good parenting, they take on the role of surrogate grandparents, and they take a young person, and during the course of the torch program and follow-up, they will actually come each week, fortnight, and act like grandparents to them. and sit and talk to them and mentor them. And that's a wonderful thing, because some of these people have never ever had anything like that before. Thank you. It operates in men's and women's prisons around Australia. It's about a 35 to 40 hour program over 3 to 5 days, and all that is based on how much time we can get into the correctional centre, when we can get in and get out, and you know, they're doing lots of other programs as well. So it's followed up by a weekly, fortnightly, or monthly meeting. We call them journey programs. So after the actual CORIS course, we will go back in on a fortnightly basis, 2 or 3 hours, and keep contact with the fellas. And the idea is to establish within the correctional centre a prayer and share group. That's what we're looking to do. So because eventually they have to learn to be able to support themselves, and eventually we hope that when they leave, they will go and join a church somewhere. So that's the aim behind it. Okay. Okay, this is outside for women. And there's also outside for men, because even if you don't realise, some of the ladies are in jail. So they have a husband or a brother or an uncle who's been impacted. So CORIS outside is for both women and men. I know that Esther's going to talk a bit more about CORIS outside, so I might leave that to her to do that. Okay, thank you. And TORCH is for juvenile offenders, as I've mentioned, so we'll move on from there. Thank you. Okay, volunteers. We have to undertake intensive training. You just can't walk into a correctional centre. There's a lot goes on. We have to actually pass a correctional centre, or the Department of Correctional Services has a program you have to go through, and it's a bit like going for your driver's test. You have to answer, you know, 95% of the questions correctly before you can go in. And there are things you have to learn. You have to learn that if you take a mobile phone into a correctional centre, you're going to do 5 years in jail. So that's important. And we've been at the door about to go in, and somebody says, oh, I found my phone. I didn't know I had it in my pocket. And we've had to sort of race around and sort of take it back to the car and lock it up, because if you take even a SIM card in, it's 5 years in jail. So you have to be so careful. And we have to know the routine of the jail and how they operate. And you have to be prepared that when you go in, you might get the metal attack to put out. You might even have to have your eyes identification through your eyes photographed, and you might have sniffer dogs there. So you have to be prepared for all those things. And you have to know the rules. You have to be so careful that you don't... like one of the things that's really interesting is when you go in there, we provide coffee and tea and lollies and things, and some of them... inmates have a bad habit of hoarding all these, and they go back and they trade them for cigarettes and things like that. So you have to be so careful that you don't sort of upset that balance in there. So, yeah, we have to have a fair bit of training. And also, then we have to do our own training. You might be asked to give a talk. You might be asked to be a table server, but you have to go through all that training too. So, yeah, there's a lot of work goes into actually being on a team, but it's a beautiful time of bonding together as a team, and we go in as a team. And that's the wonderful thing about it. Lots of prayer, so that's a really good thing. It's not glamorous. The first time I went to the Tamworth jail, they clanged that big door behind me, and I looked up at the razor wire and I said, wow, I hope they open that door this afternoon and let me back out again, because this is it really feels like it's a dark place. CORIS changes are sustainable. It affects the next generation. This is 75% of the kids from those in jail will commit crime. We're trying to break that cycle. And it saves society a lot of money. That figure of 75,000 is a bit old now. It's probably well over 100,000 just to have one person in jail for a year. Thank you. How can you help? Prayer. It's really based on prayer, because we're going into dark places and we need prayer. Agape, that's... biscuits used to be the big thing when we asked the community to bake biscuits, and we take the biscuits in. If you've ever been in jail, you don't get a biscuit, you know. Anzac biscuits, wow, they just love those sort of things. So biscuits were a big deal. Writing letters... We try and write letters to the inmates that are going to take part in the actual course. And signing on a prayer roster, we've got a, during the whole 5 days or 4 to 5 days that the Kairos course is on, the whole of the Kairos community in the world is actually locked into half-hour segments of praying right around the world. So when we're asleep in Australia here, it's dark, over in America or Britain, they would well be praying for our Kairos here in Tamworth or wherever it happens to be, which is great. And, of course, we're always short of money because the team pays for it, and it costs quite a few $1,000s to have a Kairos course, be it inside or outside. So, yeah, the team pays for all of that. Okay, well, so that's just a bit of a rough breakdown of how Kairos operates. So what I thought I might do now is try to... we can sort of close them off because I've got no more PowerPoint on this. But is try and give you an idea of what a typical Kairos course inside. Now, I'm sure that Esther will talk to you about Kairos outside, so I'm just going to home in on the inside. So a typical course involves 18 to 24 inmates who are selected by the chaplain to be part of the Kairos course. And we sit in table families, a bit like you are here. There'll be 6 inmates. There'll be a table leader, an assistant table leader, and then there'll be what we call a clergy person who's a recognised clergy within the local church, or somebody who's recognised as a lay preacher or something that's got some Christian experience. So, and they're there to handle a couple of the theological difficulties that might come through. So that's how a table is formed. They stay together as that table for the whole 3 or 5 days, whatever it is. And the course itself consists of a series of talks. There's about 10 or 12 talks that are given by the team. And I'll just give you a couple of ideas of the talks. The first important talk is called Choices. And we try to let them see that they're here because of the choices they have made. And those choices can be changed and a whole new life can open up for you. There's a talk on the friendship with God. There's a talk on God's grace. There are 2 talks on forgiveness. And that's very important because one of the things that if you're an inmate in jail that you don't realise is that you can be forgiven. And that is an amazing opening up to these people, to these inmates, that God can forgive you. Not only that, you can learn to forgive yourself. And that's just so important. In fact, that just blows some of them away. And there are 2 talks of forgiveness. One is God's forgiveness. One is forgiving yourself and others. And we usually ask them to go away and after the forgiveness talk, make a list of all of the people you need to forgive. And you'd be surprised the list they bring back. The judge who put me in here, the policeman who picked me up on the street, you know, the jury who didn't like me. Wow, you know. And one young fellow, without a word of a lie, came back and he had half an exercise book full of the people he needed to forgive. He took it seriously. And so we then take those lists and we've got a tin bucket and we put them in them and they come forward and they put their forgiveness list in there and we set fire to them and say, they're gone. And that's a big moment for those who are on that course, forgiveness. Be able to forgive others and forgive yourself and to have God's forgiveness. So after each of these talks, the table has a chance to discuss the talk. And then they have a chance to practically do something about what was important to them that they got out of the talk. And so they might write a poem. Surprising the skills and the ability some of these people have. They might do a painting or a drawing. They might even do a pantomime, act out a bit of something, see? And one of the things that's really, really interesting is when you get into these correction centres like here, is the wonderful artistic ability of some of our young Aboriginal fellows in there. It's absolutely amazing. They'll do dot paintings for us while we're there. They have got amazing skills. One of the young lads that joined in us one year was played the didgeridoo for us. A lovely young fella. He was part of the team that was asked to come the Aboriginal band and went to 2000 Olympics, and he played in the big stage. He played the didgeridoo. Here he is in jail. I said, how'd you ever get here? Well, he fell in bad company. But he, while we were there, he took a bit of PVC pipe and played the didgeridoo for us. It was just amazing. So you wonder sometimes, don't you? So you have this ability then for them at the table to draw out from the talk what was important to them. They also have short Bible teachings interspersed between the talks. A talk, say, on the prodigal son or the good Samaritan. And they also have an effect on their lives, of course. And we sing songs. It's surprising how singing brings people together. And I remember one year, the very first one we had in Tamworth here, one of the fellows got sick, the inmates, and he had to be taken across, you know, where the jail is, just across the road as the base hospital. Well, he went over to the base hospital and he said, oh, well, I'm from the correctional centre, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And they said, the nurses said to him, what's all the singing going on over there? We've never heard it before. And he said, oh, that's a chorus course. And to see those fellas come in on a Monday morning with heads down, and they won't share with anybody because you might be my enemy, and you didn't treat me very well last week while I was here. And then to see them on the Friday morning standing in a circle with their arms around one another, singing a hymn. Man, that's powerful. That is powerful stuff. Now, one of the great choruses they love to sing, I'll share it with you here. It does sound a bit irreligious in a way, but when you hear it and you think about it, it's called Drop Kick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but it is recorded. A guy by the name of Bobby Bear. It's on YouTube. You can look it up. But it goes like this. This is just a chorus. Drop kick me, Jesus, through the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left or right. Straight to the heart of those righteous uprights. Drop kick me, Jesus, through the goalposts of life. And what they're really saying is, Jesus, keep us on the right path. That's what they're really saying. So, but they love that because, of course, they're into their football like everybody else. And they get in a big circle and they're singing this at the top of their voices. So we also provide lollies and biscuits and fruit juice and what have you. And, of course, that's a luxury if you're in jail. I mean, have you ever tried to eat a microwaved frozen lettuce leaf? Not real good. So we provide meals too, usually one or two meals. And, you know, we cook up hamburgers and salads and they just love that. In fact, the biggest attraction to getting them to come and start the course is the biscuits, the lollies and the meals. But we don't mind what bait we dangle there as long as they come, because after a while they come for other things, and that's really good. At the end of the week, we have what's called a closing ceremony. And we ask, sometimes we try and ask some of the local dignitaries, and we also ask members of the various churches if they'd like to come along. It's a bit awkward because we've got to get security clearances for everybody to come in, so it's a little bit awkward, but we try to get as many people as we can, and we invite some of the wardens and the office, the officers of the jail to come and be part of the closing ceremony, at which each inmate is given the opportunity of standing up and saying, well, what did chorus mean for me? And they're given that opportunity. And some of the stories will break your heart. I remember one young lad stood up and he said, and he was talking to us and the team, and he said, you know, he said, you fellows have shown me more love this week than I've ever had from my family all my life. And that breaks your heart. And we give them a Bible and we give them a leather cross. And, you know, it's a wonderful moment when they can share their lives. I've learnt a few things since I've been in chorus. It's changed my attitude to people in jail. Let me share a couple of things with you. There are some reasons why the bulk of our people that are in jail are there. There's some good reasons why this happens. The first reason is this: poor parenting. If you have had the blessing of having had good parents, give thanks to God because you don't know how fortunate you are. Most of them in jail have had poor parenting. Secondly, they've had poor education. A lot of them are illiterate. Thirdly, they have poor self-esteem. And all of that leads to drugs and alcohol, which puts them into jail. If you could remove drugs and alcohol, you'd clear 75% of people out of jail. The drugs and alcohol comes after poor parenting, poor education, and poor self-esteem. So if you've been fortunate enough to have good parents, thank God for that. And if you are a parent, put your heart into it, because that's the next generation and we need to look after them. Let me tell you the story of a young lad to show you and illustrate this. He was in Glen Innes prison farm. During the course of the week there, we usually ask either relatives of whoever's come into the course if they'd write a letter, and we find a mum or a dad or a brother and sister out here in the real world, we do write a letter for Billy Bloggs, who's doing the chorus course, a letter of hope and encouragement. And sometimes we get lots of people to do that. If we can't find a relative, we'll get one of the team members to write a letter. So I was there, and we give these letters out, and we let them go and sit in the corners and read the letter. And this young lad, he would have been about 24 or 25, he came to me and he said, "Would you read my letter for me?" He said, I can't read. And I said, "Yeah, I'd be glad to read the letter for you." So I read his letter for him. And then we got talking. And he said to me, "I'm a fetal alcoholic." And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, "Well, while I've been carried by my mother, she was an alcoholic and I was born with a craving for alcohol," which he just can't get rid of. So he gets into trouble. He goes into jail. They dry him out. He goes back out again. And you think, "Oh, I've got this alcohol thing licked." And then he goes down to the pub, and within a few beers, he's in a fight, and then he's back into jail again. And this is just goes on like this. And then he said to me, "I was in the pub here a few months ago," he said, "before I came back into jail, and I was standing at the bar there, and my brother came up to me. And my brother said to me, 'Oh, you see through there into the saloon bar,' he said, 'do you see that man standing at the bar?'" And the young fellow said, "Yeah, I see him." He said, "Do you know who he is?" He said, "No." He said, "I don't know who he is." He said, "That's your father." He's 24 years of age, 25 years of age. He just found out this guy in the saloon bar is his father. Now, I said to myself after this, if I had been read like that, would I not also be in jail? So when you've got a background like that, you have to think seriously about there, but for the grace of God, go I. Okay, some other things about the chorus course is interesting. We're not there to advocate for better conditions for prisoners. We're not in there saying they should have shorter sentences or everybody needs their own TV and what have you. We're not there for that. And I remember the second chorus course we had in Tamworth. I was leading it. I was the leader at the time. And we have there what we call a prayer box. It's a box. And any of the inmates that want to have a prayer request, they can pop it in the box and we will take it out about twice a day and we'll pray for some of their concerns. And often they ask, "Would you pray for my mother who's sick?" or whatever it is, and we'll do that. But this particular morning, there was a prayer request in there that said, 3 or 4 of us are going into the courthouse to face the judge and ask him for a lesser sentence. Would you pray that we get a lesser sentence?" And I said, "No, we won't." Which took them back a little bit. I said, "We're not here to advocate. That's not what our job is. We're here to share the gospel." I said, "What we will do, we'll pray that the judge gives you a fair hearing." So away they went. They all come back with lesser sentences. And they said, "Yeah, the prayer worked." But see, we're not there to advocate against the law. We're there to share the gospel. It's interesting sometimes how the staff at the jail operate. Quite often they say to us afterwards, "The Kairos week that you hear in the jail is the quietest week we have. It seems as though everybody settles down." And of course, a lot of prayer goes into it. So a lot of people I think there's a real work of the Spirit of God there, and we need that. Okay, now outcomes. Well, look, it's hard to give outcomes sometimes because once they get out of jail, we lose contact with them. We're not a follow-up ministry. We're a ministry that just works in the jail, and we work with the inmates there. We don't follow them up, but often we do get stories back, which is good. So I can share a couple of those with you. Out of one of the South Australian jails, one of the inmates there had a changed life. He ended up going to theological college and becoming a United Church minister. So a real change in his life. One of the fellows that tried to become part of our Kairos team to go into Glen Innes was refused entry because he didn't pass the security check, and that's because he had been part of a rebellious group in Parramatta Jail that burnt down half the jail in the 1990s, and so the police said, no, you'll never ever be back in anything. But he wanted to become part of Kairos team, and he actually, when he came out of jail, he started to be a solicitor, and he wanted to be part of a legal aid team helping those that couldn't afford. But that's how his life changed. But the security people in the jail said, no, he burnt down after jail, we're not having him back. So unfortunately he couldn't be part of the team, which was a bit disappointing for him. Some of you may remember not that long ago, there was the case of a young woman who had got quite a bit of TV exposure who claimed that she'd cured cancer by, I think it was eating almonds or something or other, I forget, but something like that. Anyway, it turned out to be a fraud and she'd got a lot of money. She went to jail. She went up to the North Coast jail. She became a Christian. I only found out a couple of weeks ago. Her life changed. Let me just read one more testimony to you. This is actually, I printed it off because it's really a really heartfelt change in somebody's life. This is a fellow. He says, I attended Kairos and my life changed from that time. Soon after the Kairos course, I had the opportunity to face my victim's parents. This was arranged by the Restorative Justice Program, which brings the victims and perpetrators of a crime together in a conference situation to create an opportunity to say sorry and where some sort of restitution, healing and forgiveness are made possible. This was a huge thing for me, of course, but I gained great benefit. Facing my victim's parents put me face to face with the reality of the inhuman thing that I had done. And I found it quite hard to climb over it. At the time, it caused me to push away the people who had become close to me. Kairos people who cared for me and supported me, but I think I ended up by hurting myself and them too. I thought if I pull back far enough, I won't hurt anyone. But it didn't work out that way. I struggled with myself for the gutless thing that I did. You see, I'd never hurt anybody in my life before, and I don't know why this thing happened, but it did, and I'm living with it every day. Over the past few months, I've learnt to hand it over. I've had to be humble, asking for forgiveness from those I've hurt, and asking God to give me salvation for myself. That's a real good testimony. Yeah. So can I leave you just some thoughts? What can you do? Well, you can pray. When you hear there's a Kairos course on, please pray for us. We're always looking for donations, so that's important. You can be available to go on team. The only qualification you need to have to be on team is that you're willing to put the time in, and you must be able to subscribe to the Nicene Creed. That's the only thing that gives us a foundation for your faith. If you know of somebody who's been impacted by having had somebody in a correctional centre, and this is more to do with Kairos outside, and Esther will probably speak to that, invite them to come along. It costs them nothing. We'll get them there. And I want to leave you with a challenge. You're all so much aware of John 3:16, for God so loved the world. I wonder if you ever thought what that word world is. It's not the geographic world. It's not the material world. It's the world of fallen humankind. So the verse should read, for God so loved the world of fallen humanity that he gave his only son. And the people behind that barbed wire, that's fallen humanity. They need to hear from us. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So we know about Kairos, and I'm not going to ask Esther to go over ground that we've already covered, but I'm going to ask her in just a minute to share how she got involved with Kairos. All right, see. 1 minute, Esther. There you go.
Good luck. So, as you know, I shared my testimony with you guys at the last cafe church. After I became a Christian, I was dealing with getting out of my house and learning how to be social again. So most of you would know that before I became a Christian, I really struggled with just severe anxiety, social anxiety, and getting out of my house was a big deal. So I actually pushed myself. I had started attending a church. I'd been told about a sewing group that happened on, I think it was maybe Wednesdays at the time. It's Mondays now, but anyway. And I go, and in true Esther style, I start talking, and met a lovely lady named Ruth, who is here to support me today, and started talking about the fact that I'd worked in juveniles, and she said, oh, you've worked at juveniles, how about you come on a camp in 3 weeks? I'm like, sure, it's free, why not go? But I didn't realise how frightening that was for me. Not only was I going to be with a whole women I didn't know, but I was going to be out of my house for more than an hour at a time. And, you know, it wasn't easy. So I went along and I had a fabulous weekend. As I said, Ruth's here today and she's actually the reason I went on camp. It was about, I'd been really sick that week and I was like, yeah, I'm not going, I'm sick. And I had given myself till about 1:30 that afternoon to kind of make the choice of whether I was going or not. And Ruth ended up messaging me. She said, hey, Esther, looking forward to seeing you on the weekend. We'll see you there. And that was about 1:20. I'd given myself to 1:30 to say no, basically. And she just doesn't know how much that message means, because that actually gave me the confidence to go. If someone actually wants me and they want to spend time with me. That was how I got involved in the weekend.
It was a bit more than a minute, but anyway.
So,
what did you find when you went there, Esther? How was it? What was the atmosphere like for you?
It was amazing. My biggest fear is getting close to people. I have a very big personality, and I'm so aware of that, but that's also the thing that holds me back, because I'm aware that I'm in your face, I'm aware that I don't shut up, which is why I said good luck. And it's something that holds me back from connecting well with people, because I just know that I can be very full on. I had also just come to the Lord, and so I didn't stop talking about what God had done in my life either. And so can you imagine dealing with that for like 2 days straight? Like, that's really hard to deal with. But these women just loved me. They listened to me like I was somebody important. They cared about me. They didn't make me feel like I was a burden. They didn't make me feel as if I was unwanted. I'm not really good with physical touch. I don't like being hugged. I don't like, you know. But I walked away from there going, hey, I can actually feel embraced. I can actually be loved. And these ladies don't seem to mind that I'm just Esther, and they were able to put up with who I was. And that was something that I walked away. It was an amazing experience, because I just had never felt that in my life, of that I could be cared for, especially by women. That was probably the biggest thing for me was, that women could care for me. So
it seems like a common theme that I'm hearing in both Kairos inside and outside is that you just get flooded with love from people. So, you know, the inmates can't comprehend how loving that people can be.
Yep.
Esther, too, you weren't an actual prison family member, like, obviously.
My brother's actually been in
prison. Okay, so there you go. So you fitted there. And so can you just share quickly, how does this kind of translate to other people that have got, how have you seen this affect other women or family members of prisoners in your group, in your particular circumstance?
So we run a sewing group on Mondays. That's just one thing that we do to stay connected with the women who've come on camp. There's a number of women there who have either been incarcerated or who know somebody who's incarcerated. And that impacts their life dramatically. Can you imagine having your mother or your father, your son, your daughter in prison, especially sometimes when you've got them in there for a very heinous crime? It's hard to do, it's hard to deal with, and a lot of the time these women blame themselves for what's gone wrong. A lot of these women come from very abusive families. They come from abusive homes, they come from abusive relationships, and they sit there and they blame themselves. They've got the guilt, they've got the shame. Being a part of Kairos for women on the outside allows these women to have healing. A lot of them come to know the Lord, obviously not all of them, but a lot of them do come to know the Lord, and through that there's grace, there's mercy, and there's forgiveness. And forgiveness doesn't just involve forgiving others, it actually involves forgiving yourself. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've struggled with. As I said, I shared my testimony and I know the life I've come from, and I'm still dealing with forgiveness, not only towards other people but especially myself. But this gives you the ability to say, hey, you know what, I'm actually worth something. God loves me no matter what I've done, and therefore I can have a new life, basically, and I can be accepted. And a lot of these women come, they get a lot of healing from just being loved for who they are, and no matter what choices they've made, no matter what choices their family has made that they feel is their fault, and that's massive. Healing is a massive thing, and you just don't know what it can do to change someone's life. So, yeah.
Esther, so just can you wrap up with saying, what can people do to support this amazing ministry, Kairos Outside?
Yeah. So there's lots of things that you can do. We, as I've mentioned, we have a sewing group on a Monday. It's obviously on hold at the moment for COVID. But come along. It's actually a really good place to learn how to sew. I don't want to sew. I thought I did want to sew, but I don't want to sew. But I take my cross stitch along and I get to talk to other people. And not only do I get to share my life, but I get to share other people's lives as well. And you get to know these women. We don't know the backgrounds of all of them, but it gives them a safe place to come and share and to come and talk and come and to be supported. And sewing is a really good skill if you want to learn it. But a lot of these women, they learn how to sew. And it's amazing watching them make a T-shirt or make a bag. And it's something that's actually very simple to do, but they're just like, oh my gosh, I've achieved something, I've done something. And it's something they've never been able to do. It's a very eye-opening experience if you can come along and get to know them and actually understand them. People, a lot of these women just aren't listened to. And so if you can sit there and listen to them, that's an amazing thing for them. We also have a picnic at Hopscotch Park on a Wednesday. Is that on hold at the moment as well? So that's on hold at the moment as well. But when it is up and running, come along, bring your lunch, and again, get to know some of these women. So sometimes they bring their partner, sometimes they bring their kids. There's a lot that you can learn from these people, even if we're not talking about Kairos. We have a heap of brochures at the moment that we're handing out. We've got a weekend away that we generally do. We don't know if it's on this year because of COVID. Yay, COVID. But we always need volunteers. Now, as Des said, there's a lot of training that you go through. So if you think that you're not qualified, it doesn't mean you're not qualified, come along, get trained. As long as you've got the love of Christ in you and that you're willing to go there with zero judgment, we need volunteers. We need volunteers, we need finances. As Des said, the camps are free for the people, for the guests to come, including the fact that people come and pick them up. So they don't even have to pay for petrol to get there. They come out, we have a good chat with, you know, whoever's taken us out, and it's free. It's entirely free. But as Des said, it costs a couple of thousand dollars at least to make that weekend work. We need prayer. We need prayer that the camps will continue to go on. We need prayer for the volunteers to go on the camp. We need prayer for strength. We need prayer for guidance. We need prayer for everything. That's the easiest way that you can support this cause is prayer. Is there anything else? I had a list, but I'm not allowed to read it, so, you know.
Hasn't she done amazingly well? Good job, Esther. So, you didn't need your notes.
Yeah, thanks.